We are going to the telephone because I have with me live the author of Following in the Footsteps of Eve, Heather Mandel. Hello there. How are you today?
Hi, Barbara. I'm very well, and thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, I'm excited because people today are searching in so many realms. They want the spiritual, and that's something that I find on this show. People are willing to expand their horizons. And when I read that Eve could be viewed as a hero instead of a villain, I thought, I need to know more about the Kabbalah.
Well, I'm really glad the title got you interested. Rather than following, it's Dancing in the Footsteps of Eve.
Thank you. It is dancing, isn't it?
Yes. And I think that there are many ways of reading biblical text. I think that we're all used to what we see on the literal surface. And when we come to the story of the Garden of Eden, and particularly of Eve, if we read things only as it appears on the literal telling of the tale, we come out with one understanding. What I would like to suggest is that there are more ways of reading biblical text than just the literal. And I think now more than ever, when we consider what quantum physics is showing us, we are living in a world, the reality of which is much more mysterious than we ever imagined. And it's showing us that there is many things that go on around us that are not as they appear on the surface. And so I feel that trying to read into the biblical stories where all our archetypal images are first formed in Western culture, it's a good time to go back and look at what these stories say if we're willing to broaden our horizons, as you've been speaking about on your program, and try and see things in a slightly different way.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people have become interested in the Kabbalah because of course, Madonna. She has really brought attention to it. But most of us talk about body, mind, spirit, and success. And the Kabbalah talks about intuition, thought, emotion, and action.
Yes, exactly. And I think that I find it really wonderful that it's a woman named Madonna who has sparked some interest in this ancient Jewish form of knowledge.
Amen.
It's brought it into awareness. Traditionally, the Kabbalah was a body of knowledge. It's the hidden face of Judaism. Each of our religious traditions has an inner and an outer face. And Kabbalah was traditionally studied by men who were over 40 years of age and who were well-versed in Torah. And I think that people today understand that there is so much of value to be gained from this body of knowledge. Maybe being 40 years of age suggests we need to be grounded. The fact that it's open to men and women, I think, you know, women in America today, we can comfortably go with the fact that we are willing to study and open our minds. Maybe through our own intuition, we can tune in more readily to the truths that are there. And I think the idea of being well-versed in Torah really talks about the fact that because this is the Jewish hidden tradition or inner tradition, it may be easier for people who are well-versed in Judaism as a religion to be able to understand the symbols and the images used. But I believe that the truths that are there are open for everybody who has a mind that is willing to expand and look at the hidden and the more mysterious elements of our faith.
Absolutely. I know that I read that Thomas More, in speaking about Dancing in the Footsteps of Eve, actually said it's a beautifully written book about the return of a sense of divinity. Heather Mandel is especially sensitive to the spiritual needs of women, but the real contribution of this book is to offer an intelligent, intimate, and relevant idea of God in a time of confusion and forgetting. And having been a student and a follower of Thomas More, I know that you don't have to be totally versed in Judaism to understand exactly the meaning of what you are trying to communicate.
Exactly, because Thomas More is such a wonderful guide and mentor for those of us who are not Catholic, for those of us who are willing to talk to each other at a deeper level. I think in many ways our religious traditions are things that will, if anything, in trying to build up their own strength and importance, tend to keep us from really talking to one another on an equal playing field. But when we go down to the spiritual level, the hidden tradition, the inner wisdom of all our faiths, I think it brings us to a place where we can look each other eye to eye, where we can talk to each other, gain from each other, and learn from each other. Thomas More's words about my book were so appreciated by me that a man of his caliber, his writing, his teaching, would find something of meaning was really very, very meaningful to me and something I'm very grateful for.
Absolutely. Many people have read his book, Care of the Soul, if not any of his other writings. And when we know that he has actually put his stamp of approval on something, that it has some deep meaning. And I think a lot of us being women, we have had these traditional roles and we've watched them change throughout this century especially. And we want to believe that there is hidden meaning in that that action that took place by Eve in the Garden of Eden. We want to understand it at the very core.
Right. And I think that the story is there. So maybe we should talk a little bit about what I am talking about in terms of reading this book in a different way, reading this particular story, and understanding that for me, Eve is much more than just one woman, and a bad woman at that, in one specific garden at one point in history. For me, Eve is an archetype that lives within all of us. She is the intuitive, courageous, hopeful curiosity that allows us to follow the call of the mysterious. Without Eve, the human story would not move forward. And I think as women, there come many times in our own lives when we need to look at where we are and ask ourselves, are we courageous enough to make a move that we may need to make in order to become all that we can be? I think with Eve being understood only as the temptress, only as the disobedient one in the literal reading of the story, not acknowledging that without her the human journey would never begin, I think that we're left with our very first archetype of feminine energy that leaves people, women particularly, feeling disempowered, feeling hopeless, and dealing with the wounds that many women in our culture have to deal with. And so my question is to ask people, if the story of Eve, in fact, if all the biblical stories that you read are meaningful to you on a literal level alone, then that's fine. It's doing for you what is right for you. But if you feel that these stories have more to offer than just what appears on the surface, that one can go below the surface and one can find the story of the feminine energy of humanity that is ready to take the first step into physicality. For me, it's not a matter so much of God saying, do not eat the fruit. I think that what I hear in reading the story is God saying, until you are ready for everything that physical life will bring, the pain, the separation, the discomfort, as well as the joy and excitement of physical life, until you are ready for all of that, do not eat the fruit. And in reading the story in that way, I think one comes up with a feeling about God that is compassionate, trusting and loving, not forbidding, but a God who is there to help us through our human journey on this earth, which is in its very nature both joyful and at times full of pain and suffering. We have to deal with both.
Heather, not too terribly long ago, I interviewed a gentleman that wrote a book called Big Bad God. And it's amazing. So many of us grew up fearful that God was keeping a list over there, much like Santa Claus, and that we were going to be zapped at some time for something that we did. And of course, women, when people have many times looked back at the story of Adam and Eve, they have labeled her as a temptress.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the time is really now for us to relook at that. If we accept the story as it is written, that is the conclusion that we are left with. But the question that I'm asking in my book, and the question I would ask your listeners, is what do we really believe the stories in the Bible are? For some of us, it is the Word of God, and then there is no further discussion in where we go with it. For many of us, we believe that these are the ideas with which we were inspired, but that were written by human beings to tell us about the human experience or journey on earth. And the story of Adam and Eve and the garden is one way of trying to tell us about our origins. There is a wonderful Buddhist saying that you may be familiar with, Barbara. It says, the finger pointing at the moon is not the moon. And I think that this beautiful expression is also indicative of the things that we read. If we stick on the surface, what we get is the surface alone. If we realize that the stories that we have, even in the Bible, are pointing to something far more magnificent, far more broad, far more spiritual, we are willing then to look at what the truth of the stories is beyond the literal word. And I know that for some people this is a very scary thing to do because we are locked into taking things on surface value. So the question I'm putting forward in my book is the question that I would ask people, are you ready? Just as I think God says to Eve in the Garden of Eden, are you ready to take on that all that human life is going to bring? If so, eat the fruit. If you are not ready, do not eat the fruit until you are, because this is a journey of polarities. We go between the two extremes, and with the joy will come the suffering. Are you ready? I will say to your listeners and to my readers, the question we should ask too is, are we ready to maybe go back to biblical stories and look at them with a broader perspective and try and find something beyond the literal surface of what we are reading? And for some people, I know this is going to be just too uncomfortable, but I think that's the position that Eve was in. She was in the Garden of Eden. She was given the opportunity, and the Garden of Eden, for me, is really the natural world. It wasn't the laboratory of Eden or the desert of Eden or the schoolroom of Eden. It was the Garden of Eden. So we're talking about life in the natural world. And when our curiosity, which I really think is a God-given gift, when our curiosity is spurred, our intuition, our hopeful, courageous act that will allow us to look at where we are and maybe find a new way of dealing with things, we are ready to take that step, which for me is symbolized by the eating of the fruit.
And this is so parallel with our first guest on the show today as they were talking about their art gathering, their faith art gathering. As you look at a photograph or a piece of art, whether it be a sculpture or a painting, you have to go beyond the surface of that because there was something that sparked that person, their creativity, to paint that. So you have to really look at the depth of it, much like you were talking about looking at Eve in the garden.
Well, I think that's exactly right in terms of, you know, doing artwork myself. I understand exactly what your guest was talking about. When I do my lectures and presentations on my book, what I use is the optical illusion. This is something I think a lot of people are familiar with, and there's one optical illusion that looks like a dark goblet on a white background. And as you look at it, immediately you see this dark shape, and that's all you can see. But as you start to look a little more closely, all of a sudden, the dark goblet disappears into the background, and what you see are two white profiles looking at each other. It looks like two people that are now face to face. And then you go back to the optical illusion, and the goblet is what appears, and you realize you're seeing two different realities side by side, but we can only concentrate on one of them. I'm suggesting that in the Bible, or your earlier guest suggested in the artwork, we can see what is on the surface, we can read what is in the text, or we can realize that there is something deeper that motivated the writing of the story, the creating of the art piece. And so I would ask listeners or readers of my book to ask, what are these stories actually about? And then to go to the very scary place and ask, what is it that we actually believe about God? And I think that for a lot of people, this is also a very scary thing to go. We can come back with the pat answers that our religious traditions have given us. I wonder for how many of your listeners, the God that they pray to in the sanctuaries of their own souls when they are really in need of comfort or at a moment of true gratitude, is that the same image, is that the same God that they are praying to when they're in their religious organizations? If the two are the same, I think the people are very, very fortunate. For many of us, our spiritual lives and our religious lives are not necessarily exactly in the same place. And so it's interesting to see what is it that we really intuit, as you started the discussion, what is it that we intuit about God that may or may not match what we have been taught intellectually about God?
And of course, that is further evidence of information that has come forth via the CBS Morning News that only 54% of Americans are actually attending church today, showing that spirituality and religion are not one and the same.
I think, yes, for some people, I think that, you know, that this is not an issue. They do find all their spiritual meaning in their religious traditions. But I think, just as you say, with the numbers that you quote, a lot of people are moving away from their religion of origin or away from organized religion and are looking for different ways to find spiritual meaning and significance in their daily lives. What I think is really a hopeful sign is that when we can go beyond the borders of our own traditions and we can look and talk to each other, I think that we're broadening our own perspective. And I don't think that in doing that, we are necessarily going to have to diminish all of what we are. To find our similitude with one another, we don't have to give up our own individuality. But what we really can strive to do is learn to listen to each other, to understand where we are coming from as different people and members of different religious traditions with the respect, the same respect that we would like shown to us, we can show to others who believe totally different things, but still come to a point where we can treat each other respectfully and just a little more, with a little more wisdom, because we've heard a little bit about what their inner journey and their belief system is all about.
Absolutely. We all grow. And I love that in your press release, because I think it pretty much says it all. If people will read the book, Eve viewed through fresh eyes, hero or villain, your choice if you dare to make it. So it's a challenge to really stretch your horizons and test your own belief system.
And I would be delighted if people read the book and they say, no, this is really not for me. But it's at least started some sort of thinking process, because I'm not suggesting for one moment that what I'm saying is the right thing for everybody. It may be a new way of starting to find some sort of meaning and significance in the life, particularly of women. I think to myself, as you look at Eve and the way she's been portrayed over the ages, you were talking about an artist earlier on, no matter how beautifully Eve has been portrayed in sculpture, in painting, in whichever forms we've seen her, in Western culture, I think that there is not anybody who can look at any of those images and not feel some sense of shame, of guilt, of remorse. And these are the same problems that a lot of women deal with in their everyday lives. And I think it's time that we change that, that we can find a way of offering empowerment and courage and healing and hope to women as they think back into their own archetypal images. And then what they do with that energy as they move out into their lives in a different space, not being weighed down by this image that has been taught us over these thousands of years.
And you said that so eloquently, and I know that many people have heard you, and hopefully they will get your book. Where can they find it?
Well, I'm delighted. My publisher was wonderful and got this book out 6 weeks earlier than anticipated. So it is available on Amazon, and it's available on many of the online bookstores. It will be in stores, all bookstores, after November the 26th. And I'm just hoping that people will be intrigued or aggravated or annoyed or fascinated enough to want to look and see what it is. We started off speaking about Kabbalah, which we didn't go very deeply into, but certainly this book is written from a mystical point of view, and it explains for people who really don't know much about Kabbalah some of the basic ideas that are intrinsic in it. Kabbalah is really a process. It's a way of living one's life. It's not just a book or a set of books, but it's a way of approaching life with reflection, with intuition, with insight. And in many ways, I think, gives us the idea that we are earth-born but heaven-sent. And so we need to open up to that, what that heaven-sent means in this world right now, in this particular time and frame in which we find ourselves.
And I think that your book is extremely timely, and I think being on the bookshelves when it's going to come out, it would be a wonderful Christmas gift, and what a great stocking stuffer.
Well, I'm hoping so, that the people who celebrate Christmas might be daring enough to have a look at it. Certainly for people who are going to celebrate Hanukkah, I hope that this is something that they will think about as passing on as a Hanukkah gift. And just if it leaves people with more questions than answers, then it's doing a very Jewish thing, because we believe that in Judaism the questions are actually more important than the answers that we get. And I feel if this will start the discussion and give people something to contemplate, even if they reject it completely once they've read it, I think then my purpose has really been fulfilled, just getting people to think and see. I think in many ways, Barbara, the stories that we tell, the ones we lived and enjoyed as children, started off with once upon a time, and they ended up happily ever after. I think that in many ways, the story in Genesis, the story of Eve, starts off the first Hebrew word, bereshit, meaning in the beginning or once upon a time, but left with the story the way we read it, literally and on the surface, makes the happily ever after very difficult. If we're going to reread the story and try and find a different, deeper, more intuitive meaning to what was actually being said about all that physical life brings on, then I think we are getting closer to what the story is about, and maybe happily ever after is possible for men and women.
Yes, indeed. And I actually was going to say exactly what you did, in that in Jewish culture, I have always heard that the question is more important than the answer. And I thought, for Hanukkah, for Christmas, for whatever celebration, the new year especially, because so many of us set those ideals, the goals that we plan to achieve for the next year, one of those could be expanding your own spiritual walk and your ability to understand life and view things in a different way. So I thank you for giving us that.